Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie, senior reporter Mike Bond. Hope everyone is doing very well out there. UFC 314 fight week is upon us. We have been waiting for this one for a long time. Definitely the marquee event on the UFC's calendar. As of right now, they have brought absolute bangers to Miami over the past couple of years. No different with UFC 314, headlined by that vacant featherweight title fight between Alexander Volkanovski and Diego Lopez. I will be down there in Miami with the boys, Danny Segura and Abby Subban for MMA Junkie. Some great coverage coming your way, so be sure to keep things locked for that. We'll probably have a little extra here on the channel as well, and then some fun things planned for after the event in Florida too, but we will keep that coy for now, and I'll definitely let you guys know a little bit more about what we have going on coming up probably next week's episode. But for now, we are going to take a bit of an in-depth look at UFC 314. UFC commentator, the man who will be leading the booth from cage side, lead UFC play-by-play commentator John Anik, will be joining the show for a true or false episode around UFC 314. We did this back in October prior to UFC 308. Was a lot of fun. That was a stack card as well. And I think this is the perfect format to go over a deep lineup like this, and no better man than John Anik, who of course is meticulously researched and prepped for all these fights. So it'll be a lot of fun to go over all these matchups and kind of the storylines around them. Definitely please make sure to give the show a like, a subscription, a thumbs up, a comment, whatever you can do to show support on whichever platform you are consuming this on, be it audio or video. I will take a quick break and then be right back, John. We are back here on the Bonfire with a returning guest on the show, the man who will be leading UFC 314 from the booth on play-by-play, Mr. John Anik. John, thank you for being back here again for another true or false episode around UFC 314.
True or false, fact or fiction, whatever it is, we are ready to go. It's a big week, and looking forward to some sunshine hitting your face when you hit South Florida.
Yes, it's much needed. I can't wait. I haven't been to a Miami card yet. It's been like kind of just scheduling inconvenience. Last year, I was at Joshua and Ngannou in Saudi Arabia while that was happening. And then year before, I can't recall why it happened. But what's the one thing I need to do in Miami, John, when I have some free time around this event?
Gosh, I mean, I live in Boca Raton, which is about 55 minutes north of there. You know, it's hard to go wrong, though. I mean, I think every good chef has some sort of joint down in Miami. So there's a lot of great sushi joints. But yeah, you need just to have that yellow orb hit your face, right? I mean, I don't know if you're a beach guy, but for me, I would just be trying to let that sun hit my face, South Beach, whatever it is.
Yeah, well, you mentioning sushi is speaking straight to my heart. So I'll have to seek that out at some point. And yeah, you'll be on the call, of course, with Joe Rogan, Daniel Cormier, as always, reported yesterday. Dustin Poirier will be in the analyst booth with this, with Chael Sonnen and Anthony Smith as well. This is perfect for Dustin to be back on the desk, right around this co-main event with Michael Chandler and Paddy Pimblett. That should at least create some fun dynamic and analysis from him. What do you say?
Absolutely. You know, Dustin is a guy who's been featured as part of our ESPN MMA analytics team when we've been in Miami for pay-per-views prior. You know, obviously he fought Benoit Saint-Denis, but the year before he was down there, and I thought he was outstanding. Dustin and I have actually had a lot of conversations over the years about television and his future in it. But, you know, I think he's made a lot of money, so he can be selective. So we don't necessarily see him more than a couple times a year. But I think he has a lot to offer the space, and especially when it comes to that fight and, you know, the card in totality, I think, this weekend.
For sure. And we will get into that co-main event in time. But let's start at the bottom, John. I kind of grouped these early prelims a little bit together here, these first four batch. So I guess I will start off with this. And I am leading you a little bit, I will say, with these first two here, looking for certain answers. So we'll see if you go with them. I'm going to say this first four batch of fights, true or false, all four fights go to a decision here.
False. False. Bro. I mean, it's funny because we talk about like a broadcaster's dream versus a broadcaster's nightmare. And a lot of people would suggest to you that finishes are the dream for us, right? But it's not like we necessarily get a 7-minute potty break, you know, if there's a finish, right? There might be a fill scenario, you know? So I'm going to say false though, bro. We need finishes.
Okay. My follow-up to that is, I guess, is there among those eight fighters in that early batch, is there someone who you are most compelled by?
Well, I guess I would say Cedric Wisdoumis. Now, Mikhail Oleksijczyk is a perennially underappreciated guy. You know, I think when you look at certain fights that he's been in, Shahrbulut Magomedov, you know, I do think that he has that sort of toughness quotient on Pat. He's a gamer, and I think he's underrated skill set wise. But Pensacola, Florida, baby, Cedric Wisdoumis. This is an opportunity for him to take advantage of a showcase. And, you know, his UFC career has been a little bit uneven, you know, but I think usually when the preparation and the focus and the presence has been there in the 6 or 8 weeks leading into a fight, he's been good. So I got my eyes on Dumas to see if he can sort of maximize his utility this weekend.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by Trayshawn Gore, just obviously, you know, a guy who came through the tough circuit and had a little bit of a rocky start to the UFC run, but it seems like he's finding his form a little bit here. So I'm curious to see if he can actually make a run or do something interesting at middleweight.
Yeah, it's a tricky division, and obviously I don't have to tell you about his history, but he's turned it around. And, you know, sometimes early on in UFC careers, whether you've won the Ultimate Fighter or realized success on Dana White's Contender Series, sometimes you start 0-1 or 1-2, and all of a sudden you find yourself in a must-win scenario fighting for your job. So that is obviously not the fate of Gore this weekend because of what he's been able to do recently. But, yeah, he's a plus athlete, and I'm excited to call his fight.
Yeah, and as we move up the prelims here to the ESPN televised prelims, I believe they also stream on Disney Plus now, which is something that's kind of new within the past recent events. Darren Elkins versus Julian Arosa. I feel like this is a bit of a leading 1-2 here, John. True or false, Darren Elkins will bleed.
Ha! True. Yes. True. Now, I'm not sure if he'll get cut open in the inspection zone when they're smearing him with Vaseline, but he might. Yes, Darren Elkins will bleed, and it's a really good matchup, you know, because Darren Elkins just won't go away. And no. Julian Arosa is an offensive fighter in all phases of the game, and whether it's submission over position or just his long-range weaponry in terms of the striking, he's going to be going for it. And Darren Elkins just will not go away. And I know you're probably going to get to Jim Miller, but let me just say, in terms of Darren Elkins and Jim Miller and some of these guys, right, not just sustaining and leading the league in longevity, but winning, right? It's like you don't just stick around, right? Like with respect to Clay Guida, the reason he's not here because at the end he wasn't winning. You know, Darren Elkins is still viable. Now he's plus 285 this weekend, but, you know, Darren Elkins doesn't lose two fights in a row. So we'll see what he has for Julian Arosa. And yes, there will be blood.
Yes, for sure. And I guess the follow-up to that, Darren Elkins now coming into this, he has 18 UFC featherweight wins. Max Holloway, who is no longer in the division, has 20. What do you think? Will Darren Elkins hold that record by the time all is said and done? Do you think he's got at least 3 more UFC wins in him?
I think he's got a good chance to tie it. I think that's where I would sit. You know, you set the total over-under at maybe 2.5. I'm not sure if Max Holloway has punted with finality on the featherweight division, and that could sort of play into it as well. But, yeah, we'll say Elkins ends his UFC career with 20 featherweight wins.
Okay, yeah, tied for the record. Yeah, what, is that just a gut thing you feel Max might be changing that up, or do you feel what kind of makes
I just think that the fight game is strange, man. You know, the fight game is strange. And, you know, fan appetite for Max Holloway versus Ilya Topuria was insatiable. And that was like the dream matchup, I think, for so many fight fans. If they could have put any fight together at that time, it would have been Max Holloway versus Ilya Topuria. And I think when you are on that type of level, Max could find himself in a title fight at featherweight. Stranger things have happened. So I'm excited to see him at 55. Max Holloway actually told me at one point in time that he wanted to have a UFC fight at 85 before his career was said and done, not just 70, but at middleweight. So wouldn't put it past him. But, you know, I don't think there's any question that if there were a championship sort of angle or lane and the promotion felt like Max was the guy, that they would get in that lane.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what, if he does end up fighting at lightweight next, how he's going to be changing his body this time around. Right. Cause the one with Dustin Poirier last time, he only had a couple months, and I know he said if it was going to happen again, it would maybe be a more long-term thing. So curious to see if we get that scheduled, what it looks like. But on to the lightweight division itself here with the next prelim here, as you mentioned, Jim Miller versus Chase Hooper, true or false, the outcome of this fight will decide if Jim Miller actually reaches 50 UFC fights?
Good question, Michael. I'll say false. So I think Jim Miller's going to get to 50 UFC fights. And most remarkably is that he's had to navigate that Lyme disease all en route to potentially getting to 50 UFC fights. He is a plus 500 underdog this weekend. I don't have to tell you that, but Chase Hooper is a minus 700 favorite. And even if you and I, even if you and I would agree that he doesn't deserve that type of bloated distinction, Chase Hooper's the man right now. And Chase Hooper has exceeded the expectations of a lot of people, maybe my broadcast partners and others. But I think Jim Miller gets to 50, you know, and not unlike what we were saying about Darren Elkins, you know, Jim Miller is winning fights, right? And say what you want about the UFC 300 performance against King Green, you know, but he immediately responds in kind. So I think Jim Miller could get to, you know, 51 if he really wanted to, but I'm confident he gets to 50, even if he doesn't cash as a plus 500 underdog this weekend. You know, I think, you know, the betting line suggests that he's up against it, and, you know, Chase is an oncoming force that that needs to be reckoned with. So we'll see.
Yeah. Wow. If you had said a couple of years ago, Chase Hooper would be that big a favorite over the right man with the most wins in UFC history, I think many would have been surprised.
Yeah. I mean, I believe in Chase. I long have believed in Chase. I think he has a great mind for fighting, a great frame for the division. And, you know, his mind has always been open. You know, I just think that, you know, yeah, maybe he didn't look as phenomenal, and you can focus on the root word phenom there, as Raul Rosas Jr. when he was in his formative years in the UFC, right? I mean, Rosas Jr., six UFC wins at 20 years old or whatever it is. It's insane. But no, I think Chase Hooper maybe wasn't given the benefit of the doubt by some because he didn't look the part. And how far can he take it? I don't know. But, you know, Paddy Pimblett to some doesn't look the part either, even though he's an athletic specimen. And he's two wins away from a world championship opportunity. So I'm excited. I believe in Chase, and hope he gets those powdered blue shorts at some point in time.
Yeah, the move to lightweight has done wonders for Chase Hooper. And the reason I guess I asked this is I heard Jim Miller do an interview with the guys at MMA Junkie Radio. And I don't know if he was just like tired, had a bad day of training, whatever, but just like his tone didn't, I heard him talking a little bit more about like, maybe it won't be too much longer, more so than I feel like I have around some recent fights. So again, wasn't being, again, maybe it was just a weird day, who knows, but I don't know if this goes very badly for him, who knows how that changes his thoughts on the future, but we shall see. On to the next one here. Yan Zhao Nan and Verna Janduroba, huge fight at strawweight. True or false, this fight is a title eliminator at strawweight?
True, certainly for Verna Janduroba. Vina Kakara Janduroba, we're going to play her audio file later today on the Anakin Florian podcast. She's already championship worthy. And I think that if you were to ask Dana White or Hunter Campbell about that, or Mick Maynard, Sean Shelby, they would all agree that she already is worthy of a championship opportunity. She had a fight penciled in against Tatiana Suarez, who was essentially pulled to fight for the world title. So Vina's right there. I think for Yan Xiaonan, if you're able to end this winning streak for Janduroba and do so emphatically with a finish, you know, Yan Xiaonan's style is such that she is bulletproof matchmaking in terms of the entertainment value. But I kind of think she needs to put this woman away. And if she's able to do that, you know, then I think she reopens the conversation. I just don't know what the promotional appetite would be for a rematch between Zhang Weili and Yan Xiaonan, however competitive it was at UFC 300, right? I just don't see that as something that is in our immediate or even distant future. Zhang Weili potentially could have business to attend to at flyweight if Valentina Shevchenko can get past Manon Fiore. So, yeah, I think for Vina, to be sure, like, I think if Vina wins, you know, she's fighting Zhang Weili if there's no super fight. So, true.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty accurate analysis. The only thing, I guess, the best path for Yan is like if they wanted to do an event in China or something, that would be right there. And that's obviously the biggest title fight you could put on there between two Chinese fighters. So maybe the schedule affords her that opportunity more so than, I guess, like merit, but would be a great spot for her to be in. Is your expectation, I guess, that we are waiting to see what happens in that fight in Montreal for the champion, for Zhang Weili? Like, does she have a hard eye on maybe moving up, or is there a possibility this is crowning the next fight we get for her?
See, it's interesting because in terms of the business still to attend to at strawweight for Zhang Weili, I'm not sure exactly what that is in terms of a number one contender. You know how much I love Vina Kakara Janduroba, right? Yeah. And if she beats Yan Xiaonan, that is a makeable fight. But when you talk about Alexandre Pantoja trying to track down Demetrius Johnson as the greatest flyweight of all time, or Zhang Weili trying to track down Amanda Nunes as the consensus greatest women's mixed martial arts athlete of all time. What do they need to do? Like, what would Pantoja have to do to somehow dethrone Demetrius Johnson in the eyes of the MMA masses? I don't even know if it's attainable as great as Pantoja is. Zhang Weili, I think you can already talk about her in the same vein as Amanda Nunes, right? And for a time, it was Amanda Nunes is the consensus greatest of all time with respect to Cyborg and Rousey. It's Amanda Nunes' world. Everybody else is living in it. Valentina Shevchenko is great, but she lost twice to Amanda and she lost to Alexa Grasso sort of in an emphatic way. And now we have Zhang Weili, two head-to-head losses to Rose Namajunas. And yet, right now, I think she is neck and neck with Amanda Nunes. So it's a long-winded way of saying, what does she prioritize, right? Does she want to try to chase down Amanda in that two-division way, or does she want to try to further distance herself from, say, Joanna Jędrzejczyk as the greatest strawweight queen ever, or Rose? You know, I don't know, but I can tell you that she's right there with Amanda for me. They're the two greatest of all time in the women's game.
Yeah, and I do think if she does end up going to 25, I can't see a scenario where she just gives up that belt or vacates it or something. It'll probably be a champ situation because it's not like there's, you know, a ton of people waiting in line for their cracks. So maybe it works out where she gets to have her cake and eat it to a degree in this situation. So we shall see at strawweight. But on to the next, Dan Ige against Sean Woodson. True or false, John? Dan Ige needs this win more than Sean Woodson.
Again, you have great questions. I think in terms of fighting for the world championship, maybe true, but Sean Woodson's a big man. And even though he has shown to be more than capable of making the weight, you know, Sean Woodson has bided his time and waited for a big name opportunity like this. He's getting it. It's the featured prelim, a couple million people. It stands to reason to be watching Sean Woodson this weekend. So he can kind of ill afford a setback as well. I don't have to tell you about the treacherous nature of the waters at 145 pounds, but yeah, I mean, Dan Ige holds serve against the guys that he is supposed to beat. And oftentimes he does so by knockout. And then he has shown to just be one beat behind when it comes to the guys that maybe on paper he is not forecast to beat. And you can argue, as I sit here early fight week and look at Sean Woodson as a minus 155 betting favorite, that maybe this isn't a guy on paper that Dan Ige is supposed to beat right now in current form. But, you know, Ige, I think, was super motivated watching that featherweight main event between Lerone Murphy and Josh Emmett, two guys that he's familiar with. And, you know, I can see why some people might take a look and a long, hard look at the powerful Dan Ige at plus 130 this weekend. But yeah, man, you know, I think Eric Nixick probably would tell you privately, like, this is one we got to have.
Yep. And you look at the featherweight division, as you said, treacherous waters. You got Woodson on his 8-fight unbeaten streak, Bobsar Avoyev on his 8-fight winning streak, and Lerone Murphy on his 9-fight unbeaten streak. So a lot of long runs here. One of these guys is going to have to win 12 or 13 fights to get their title shot. So it's going to be a tough run for one of these guys, at least. We'll see if Woodson can kind of separate himself a little bit here. On to the main card now, John, on pay-per-view. As we said, you'll be leading the booth here with Cormier and Rogan. True or false for Nikita Krylov versus Dominic Reyes? The winner of this should be in a title eliminator for their next fight.
Well, in the Mike Bond fighting championships, true, and you can be sure. There's so much that goes into this, right? And you do have the presence of Alex Poatan Pereira sort of lurking over this light heavyweight division. Nikita Krylov for a long time has sort of been the forgotten man, and there have been bouts of inactivity and there have been inopportune losses at times, right? The betting lens is but one angle to look through for this fight, right? But Nikita Krylov's minus 192, Dominic Reyes in pretty good current form at plus 160. This is a huge, huge fight. And strategically placed, you know, I do think there's a great chance that we get a finish in this fight. I think I speak for everybody in the fight game when I say that we're excited to see Dominic Reyes back and back in a big way. But Nikita Krylov's as versatile a guy as there is in terms of finishing in all phases as there is in this 205-pound division. And I would think the avid fans, you know, even if it's not some major needle mover, would really get excited about a matchup between Magomed Ankalaev and Nikita Krylov. So, you know, maybe not your mom's cup of tea, but it's a huge, huge fight. And you can be sure we're going to make sure everybody knows how to pronounce Krylov because he might be a world champion one day. He's that good.
Yeah, real stakes between these two guys. I mean, if I'm the winner here, I'm probably calling out either Carlos Alberg or Jiří Procházka, and that's kind of what I say is your potential title eliminator, is these two things run back, and then who knows, maybe there is opportunity there. I mean, do you think we are getting Ankalaev versus Pereira too? Like, I hear your fellow analysts, you know, in all the interviews, Chael Sonnen saying it's a bad idea for Pereira to run it back immediately. Some others kind of following off the back of that. You see Ankalaev out there saying you aren't taking this rematch in August. What's going on here? What's kind of your temperature on this right now?
I think you're going to see that fight. I think it just depends on the timeline. I think you're going to see an immediate rematch. I think Alex Pereira is excited to go in there and try to see if he can do better against Magomed Ankalaev. And not unlike the great Israel Adesanya and some other champions that we've had prior, Alex Pereira is not so emotionally tied to a defeat that he's worried about what successive losses to Magomed Ankalaev might do to his legacy. So with respect to my colleague, Chael Sonnen, I do think that is going to be the fight. But when you have a long winning streak in one of these divisions, oftentimes your number gets called. So like if you're Nikita Krylov and all of a sudden they need a guy at light heavyweight, you know, maybe you're the guy whose number gets called. You know, Joaquin Buckley was very close, as I understand it, to getting his number called to face Bilal Muhammad, you know, even if maybe Ian Machado Gary in the eyes of some would have been more deserving because he had faced and nearly beat Shavkat Rakhmonov in a lot of respects. You know what I mean? So sometimes just having the longest winning streak in tow can result in an opportunity, you know, on 6 or 8 weeks notice getting a title fight. But it is my wholehearted expectation that the next fight for Ankalaev, title defense number one, is going to be against the biggest superstar in the sport.
Agreed, as it should be. On to Yair Rodriguez versus the debuting former Bellator champion, Patricio Pitbull. True or false, John? Patricio Pitbull is your most anticipated UFC debut of the past 5 years. Other potential ones you could name: Michael Chandler, Michael Page, Kayla Harrison, Alex Pereira, Paddy Pimblett.
Yeah, false. I would have to say false. He is the greatest fighter, and you put me on the spot, Bonnie. You know, I got to sit down with this guy in a couple of days, but he's the greatest fighter in Bellator history. He is as accomplished a fighter as has ever crossed into the UFC from another promotion, but there have been so many UFC debuts that have come with such fanfare that it's just hard to just place him in that number one slot sort of in a universal way. But I'm very excited to call the fight, and I can assure you he's getting the absolute best of Yair Rodriguez, who is just in such a great way right now, mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, in terms of his discipline, his motivation, everything else. So it's a super intriguing fight and night. I feel like you can argue on this moving night in the featherweight division might be the biggest night in UFC featherweight history, right? When you talk about Elkins, Erosa, and Ige Woodson on the prelims, and then Yair Rodriguez, Patricio Pitbull, Bryce Mitchell, John Silva, and then the featherweight championship, right? Biggest night in UFC featherweight history. And Yair Rodriguez is going to make sure that he holds serve, I think, you know, and reminds people that, you know, he's been the guy who's been there and done that here in the big show. But it's an electric matchup. You know, Pitbull's a really, really good athlete, high fight IQ. We'll see how he handles the, as Laura Sanko put it, the Rubik's Cube of razor blades that is Yair Rodriguez.
Love that name. Speaking of Yair, like, it can be an interesting, as you said, movement for this division. We'll get into it with the main event, but this Noche UFC card in September, UFC 320, is kind of like standing out like a sore thumb now as far as who could go where. Like, Diego Lopez making it very clear he'd want to defend the title. You would think maybe like Movsar, he told me last week he'd want Movsar to be the first guy, but with Yair's roots and all that stuff, is he a threat to maybe take that spot if he puts on the right performance here?
I don't know how you could suggest otherwise in terms of just straight electric offense. Yair Rodriguez is as dynamic as anybody in the sport, and I can understand why some fans would be salivating in a matchup between Diego Lopez and Yair Rodriguez with a Guadalajara backdrop, right? It would be systematically insane. But my gosh, man, right? Again, like if you and I in a straight meritocracy were running a promotion, Movsar Eovloev at 9-0 with a win over Diego Lopez and any number of different contemporaries at featherweight would have to be the guy. He would just have to be the guy. You know, you reach a point of undeniability, and Bilal Muhammad reached that point. Merab Dwalishvili reached that point. And I feel like Movsar Eovloev has reached that point. I don't know if I saw some rumors or some reports about maybe Movsar Eovloev welcoming Aaron Pico to the UFC, but it's like, man, can the dude catch a break? You're going to give him Aaron Pico right now at 9-0 in the UFC. Yeah, I love hearing Volk and Diego Lopez inject the name Movsar Eoglu into the equation, because he has to be next, Michael. He has to be next.
Yeah, there is legs to that reporting. Nothing official yet, but I think there's a pretty good chance we see Movsar welcome Aaron Pico to the UFC in the May 17th main event, which just seems crazy to book that right now as we sit here 5 days away from the fight, where both guys, Volkanovski and Lopez, have said Movsar should be next. So you laid out the case better than I. Timing just seems weird, but you know the UFC schedule. It stops for no one. They need a main event for May 17th, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. So there you go. Speaking of featherweights, though, we stick in the division. Bryce Mitchell versus John Silva. True or false? The narrative, the noise around Bryce Mitchell is skewing the perception of his chance of actually winning this fight.
Another great question by a fine journalist. And I will say true. Yeah. Whether he's lifting weights in blue jeans and boots or not even wearing any clothes, he's putting in the work. He's one of the hardest workers in the game. And you've also seen him go to great lengths to travel, to train with high-level training partners. I just think that Bryce Mitchell's commitment in totality to martial arts sometimes is what gets lost in all of this. And, you know, I don't have to tell you about his ground fighting exploits. You know, outstanding submission guy, really good ground striker. He has heart. He has toughness, fight IQ, durability. He's got a lot of different things. And, you know, the betting line would suggest to you with John Silva minus 325 that he's going to need every bit of them to come through as a plus 260 underdog this week. Excuse me. But I do believe that based upon the narrative and some of what he has said, we are losing sight of just the mixed martial arts matchup. And, you know, you can count me among the surprise, despite the fighting nerd success and John Silva's ability in all phases and, you know, his undeniable death touch power. Minus 325 against a guy as tried and tested in the UFC as Mitchell, I just don't see it.
Yeah, all the narratives around this making it very interesting. You could make the argument the most intrigue in this fight, though, man. Like, on this YouTube channel, posted their face off from that press conference they did. It's still getting dozens of comments, thousands of views every day, like a month later, and especially as we go into fight week. So people want to see this fight, whatever their reasons may be for that. This is going to be a cornerstone, and there is a reason. It is the featured bout on this pay-per-view, leading into the co-main event at lightweight, Michael Chandler versus Paddy Pimblett. True or false, John? Michael Chandler making a relatively quick 4.5 month turnaround is a good thing for him in this fight.
True, for sure. I think he would have loved to have been in a more active competition schedule, not unlike what he had when he first came to the UFC. But the hay is in the barn, right? The hard work is done. That doesn't even begin to describe it when it comes to Michael Chandler's commitment. I could sit here and get blue in the face talking to you about Paddy Pimblett's commitment or Bryce Mitchell, as I just mentioned, but whether the world is there to see it on Instagram or not, Michael Chandler doesn't miss strength and conditioning workouts. You know, no. He is married to the game. You never have to worry about his preparation. So don't you think a guy like that would like to be competing every 3 or 4 months? And I also think it stands to reason that, yes, the result would just be better in a more active competition cycle, just feeling that canvas underneath your feet and everything that comes with just being in there with a guy that you really can't simulate in training. You know, sometimes I think the issue just can end up being the opponent, and he's got a real high-level opponent. Paddy Pimblett is favored to beat him this weekend, but I do like the fact that Chandler's making a quick turn. I think it's a good question, and it stands to reason that it'll benefit him and bring out his best.
And you did that sit down with Paddy around that press conference. What was your biggest takeaway, I guess, from that you bring into your take on this fight on Saturday?
Two things. First of all, he's loose as a goose. He's ready to challenge him against the elite fighters. He could have come to the UFC, I think, when Joe Silva called when he was 21. Mm-hmm. Could have come when he was 23 years of age, but he bided his time, came at the right time. And then the other thing, right? You know, some people believe Sean O'Malley was thrust into a world championship opportunity. He beat Piotr Jan, right? Paddy Pimblett could easily try to parlay a win over Michael Chandler into a championship opportunity. Instead, though, he's talking about beating Chandler and then having to get through either Charles Oliveira or Dustin Poirier. And a lot of fans would maybe bat an eye at a matchup between Paddy Pimblett and Charles Oliveira. And I think that might be the toughest guy for him to beat other than Islam Makhachev. But Paddy believes in himself, believes in his skills. He's an outstanding athlete. And he has a lot of different ways that he can put you away with strikes and with chokes. So he is not looking to fast track this thing or to get past the number one contender type. So I guess that was my biggest takeaway, that he has a real understanding of what the trajectory would be, that he's going to have to beat Chandler and maybe beat Charles. And then in theory, if he could do those things, big ifs, yes, but he'd be ready for Islam. And as I've said too, Mike, and I don't know if I said this to you privately, all Paddy Pimblett has to do is get to a title fight to be a global superstar. Doesn't have to win the championship. Just got to win these next two fights. And if he can beat Michael Chandler, superstar status might be attained. Beating Charles, holy fuck.
Yep. He's got some big opportunities ahead. And speaking of big opportunities, main event, Alexander Volkanovski versus Diego Lope, the vacant featherweight championship. True or false, John, if Alexander Volkanovski wins, he will be a more legitimate two-time featherweight champion than Jose Aldo, the other two-time featherweight champion. And I can give you some background there. Jose Aldo was an interim title holder who was promoted to undisputed champion the second time after Conor McGregor was stripped. All that crazy stuff happened with the division. And then he ended up fighting Max Holloway, all that stuff here. Volkanovski would be a guy who obviously took the belt from Holloway and then be winning a vacant championship here.
I mean, am I allowed to fence it? Like, why don't you ask me who I'd rather call fights with, Daniel Cormier or Dominic Cruz? You know? Yes, I think based upon straight merit, right, this would be enormous, right? So I'm not necessarily going to give you a true false, but the way you and I and others feel about Diego Lopez, and I'm inferring there, right, beating a prime Diego Lopez right now to regain the throne on the back end of everything that Volkanovski has done, for me, would make him cemented as the most decorated featherweight champion of all time, right? I think it's hard, like, when you compare anybody to Jose Aldo, because I can barely even be in a room with the guy. I get so starstruck, right? And I've called basically Volk's entire career. Kenny Florian and I just went back and watched Volk's UFC debut, bro, from 2016. And nice to see the lettuce flowing up top. But dude, he was so good then, right? Wasn't switching stances all the time, you know? But like, he was so good back then. And then you think about now the 9 years of hard work that have produced this guy. We'll see what happens, man. If he can get by Diego Lopez, yeah, I think for me, I would have a hard time arguing Jose Aldo.
So everyone is going to be talking about the 35 or older stat in relation to Alexander Volkanovski. Here's another stat that I've spent the past few days going over. Fighters coming into UFC title fights off a loss, 20-40-1. Fighters coming into a UFC title fight off of two losses, 0-5.
Yeah, those are pretty telling. Those are pretty telling. It's going to be interesting to see what version of Volkanovski shows up here. I think there's one segment of the fan base and the pundit base that believes that this time off is going to result in a prime Alexander Volkanovski showing up and that maybe he didn't lead the league in MMA miles pre-UFC. And then another segment of, I think, people feel like he's, you know, in the twilight of his career. And that's why they play the game. So we'll bring it all to you on pay-per-view. I tend to lean more towards we're going to get a prime Volkanovski, and the issue might just be that Diego Lopez is an absolute killer, right? I just feel like the vibe I'm getting from Volk, the preparation, the time off, I think he's going to perform as good as ever. Not sure it'll be enough. We'll find out.
We will find out on Saturday, John Anik. You will be leading the call, as we said multiple times, going to be a great event from Miami at the Kaseya Center. Thank you so much for being back here on The Bonfire, John. I will take a quick break and then be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another episode of The Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to John once again for his time. A lot of fun there, a lot of ground covered as it relates to UFC 314. A lot is going to come from this fight card as we went over there. I mean, man, that main card, absolutely exceptional. Some great prelims as well. Hopefully we gave you all you needed and more to be ready for this event. It is going to be a big one. As I said off the top, we'll be down there in Miami providing coverage, and it is going to be a spectacular show. I really can't wait. A lot going on through this fight week. Media day on Wednesday, UFC 314 press conference on Thursday, Friday, of course, the morning official weigh-ins. Friday afternoon, there will be a UFC 316 press conference. I would expect Merab Dvalishvili, Sean O'Malley, Juliana Pena, and Kayla Harrison to be there. Maybe some others as well, but most certainly those title fight athletes for that June 7th pay-per-view in Newark. And then, of course, Ceremonial Lands will close things off Friday afternoon, and then UFC 314 Saturday. So please be sure to follow along with all the coverage we'll be providing down there on my social medias as well, at Mike Bond MMA on Instagram, at Mike Bond on X. Thank you so much to my man Kamikaze for helping produce the show as always. And thank you all for tuning in. Until next week, we will see you back here by the Bonfire.